Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to Spark London.
We tell true stories.
We tell them live.
And we tell them all across London.
To attend one of our live shows, head to sparklondon.com.
Thank you very much for coming. Who's been to, just put a show of hands please, if you've been to Spark before? Okay, quite a few newbies, good. So just for those who haven't, just to give you an idea, we're a true storytelling club that happens all around London. We have a night in Hackney and a night in Brixton, which are open mics. And then we have a curated night, a handpicked night, which happens tonight. It's my favourite night out, basically. It's where I've met some of my bestest, weirdest, most interesting, most inspiring friends. It's where I've discovered that things don't have to be embarrassing memories that I have to keep locked in, but can be moments that are shared in rooms like this. And people can laugh at them and say that I've done that too. So if you enjoy tonight, come to one of our Hackney and Brixton open mics and maybe you'll be inspired to tell a story too. Are you ready for your first storyteller of the evening? Yeah. Yes, very good, very good. I'm very, very excited to introduce to you Sudeshna Chowdhury, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. It was 1981 and I was 14 years old. I lived in Uganda with my family at a time of a terrible regime that we'd just survived for Idi Amin. I'm sure you must have heard of that name. And after that, we had government after government that was just totally unstable. A time of violence. My parents were both teachers, very dedicated to their work. My mum was an English teacher for 16 years. My dad was an art teacher for 26 years. And in fact, they said, he taught so many students that they came from all walks of life. Ministers, doctors, clerks, you name it. They were all around the country. One fine morning, my mother came to me and my little sister and said, guess what, girls? Daddy's agreed for us to go on holiday in the next 2 weeks. Isn't that great? I was so overjoyed. I just picked up my baby brother. He was just like a little toddler. And I just swung him around the room and I just danced with him around the room. I was so excited. We're going on holiday. We're going on holiday, I shouted. I couldn't wait. We all packed our stuff. And we got into the car. And as we sped along, my little sister and I just kept singing songs loudly in enjoyment and just being so happy. And as one happens, you know, a long journey, we fell asleep. At some point, my mum was nudging me. Just get up, quickly, get up, get up. I'm thinking, looking, what's going on? So I opened my eyes. And I see in the distance, this is quite near to the capital city, a roadblock. And there was about six soldiers telling us, stop, stop, stop the car. So we stopped the car. And one of the soldiers came out and came to the window of the car and looked at my dad and said, all of you, get out. Just get out. We were so scared. We all got out, didn't question. He said to my dad, "Get those suitcases out. Open them, open them, open them." So my dad opened them. And then we had about 4 soldiers coming and grabbing our clothes, grabbing my father's photography. He had all these slides, you know, valuable things. Our passports, our documents, everything was being taken in front of our eyes. But that was not all. At one point, one of the soldiers took a look at my baby brother. He was a little toddler, and he just flung him into the bush. And then the other soldier pushed my mother, myself, and my little sister to the one side, and then he started laughing, saying, "Oh, why don't you come and stay with me and be my wife?" And I just looked at my mother, and I was holding on to her sari. I was so scared, and I could see my mother had turned pale. Her eyes were wide with fear, and all you could see from her mouth was moving mouth, saying something. I could tell she was praying silently, but she didn't say a word. She was so scared. And then my father saw this, and he did a brilliant thing. He said to that soldier, "Pole, pole," which means slowly, slowly in Swahili. And somehow that seemed to have an effect on the soldier, and he let go. But the other soldiers just kept on grabbing all our stuff. And in the end, they just said, "Oh, just let's just go, let's just run, let's just give, let's just leave them, let's just take the stuff and go." So they all ran away. At which point my mother quickly grabbed the baby that was still crying and realized there was one thing they had left behind, thank God, was the baby's milk. So she gave the baby the milk, and my brother quietened him down. And we all got back in the car. We just didn't know what to do. But my dad, he was crazy. He went out onto the road. He was mad. He started shouting, gesticulating wildly, saying, "This is no good. Dad, Dad, just get back in. Someone's going to kill you. Just get back in." But did he listen? Nah, he was too crazy. And then, as if that wasn't enough, out of the bushes came another group of soldiers. And this time, when they saw my father doing all this stuff, one of them went with a gun and just cocked it up against his neck. And he was about to shoot. But one of them, who seemed to be like a leader, I saw he was a tall man, he came forward and he said, "Stop!" And then he went, "Oh my God! Mwalimu Chowdhury! This is my teacher!" And suddenly we all realized that this was my dad's ex-student. He was the commander of the army. "What are you doing here, sir?" he says. So my dad quickly explained to him what had happened. He said, "Sir, this is so unlucky. Today was the day when they attempted to assassinate the president of Uganda. And you will not be safe all the way to the capital city and the airport. It's just one roadblock after another. They will kill you. But I am going to give you an escort. And you will be safe. And I must take you to the police station. But before we do that, let me see if I can get your things back." So he called the other soldiers, and they went back, and they tried to find the soldiers, but they were gone. So the only thing they managed to get was a couple of bags, and one of them contained all our documents, our passports. Oh, my father and my mother's sigh of relief. At least we can fly. And when we got to the police station, such was the fear that they actually surrounded our car and wanted to arrest us. And when they saw it was just a family, "Oh, sorry, apologize. But you can't stay here. You're going to have to go to a friend's house." Even our friend was scared to let us in, but they did eventually. And the next day, they took us to the airport. It was only when the plane took off and I could see it was the Ethiopian Airlines and the air stewardess was serving coffee and drinks in that civilized way as one does in a plane, that I finally felt... I could feel safe. But you know, the troubles were not over, because all the money had been stolen. There was nothing. The problem was, when we got to Mumbai, we had to buy tickets for a 3-day journey across to Calcutta, where our hometown was, where our relatives lived. What could we do? So when we got there, my father was now, I don't know what to do. Standing there at arrivals was a man with a sign saying, Mr. Chowdhury. So that's strange. And the man approached him and said, you are Mr. Chowdhury, aren't you? He said, yes. I am here to look after you. I am not to tell you who I am and who sent me. Please do not ask. But I have booked you in to a 5-star hotel for 2 days while I go and get tickets for your train journey. We didn't know who this man was. Neither did my parents. He took us to this hotel. He even gave us some money. He said, take this money because I know you need to buy essentials. And my parents were so grateful. They didn't even have toothbrushes, no slippers, nothing. So we stayed for 2 days. And at the end of 2 days, he escorted us to the train station. He put us on the train. And the last time I saw that man, that kind stranger, was him waving. We could see him through the train windows. And I never saw him again. And we got safely to Calcutta. I will never forget that day. For I am standing here speaking to you only because I was saved through my father being such a resourceful man and having all those ex-students that could save our lives and the kindness of strangers who could have been an angel for all I know. Thank you.
Deshna Chowdhury there. Next storyteller. I just heard her story actually 20 minutes ago in the, we did a little run through, a little rehearsal, and it was that good that I'm still really, really excited to hear it again. Please give a warm, sparkling welcome to Alex Fox, ladies and gentlemen.
I've always had a really keen sense of smell, but in addition to that, I'm blessed with a neurological quirk called synesthesia. Synesthesia is quite hard to explain, but basically what happens is when a person experiences an outward stimulus, they simultaneously experience an ostensibly totally unrelated, but really quite vivid and sometimes overwhelming sensory response. It's easier to illustrate than it is to explain. So, for example, some synesthetes, if they hear a particular note, they'll visualise a colour spontaneously, completely subconsciously. So if they hear a certain piece of music, they will see neon yellow. For other people, when they say certain words, they taste them in their mouths. They can be gritty or greasy. I've got a friend who I've met through my research into this who actually told me that when she says my name, she tastes raspberry sorbet, which is quite pleasant, really. Now, my synesthesia connects to my sense of smell. When I feel particular emotions, I will experience a scent that I absolutely know is not there and that nobody else in the room can smell. So if I meet someone I really like, I get the odour, it's kind of a citrusy scent, something like lemon bonbons and washing up liquid mixed together. Or if I'm having a really nice time, a really good conversation, say, I'll be able to smell fresh, warm Danish pastries. And the breeze will even feel hot in my nasal passages as though someone's just opened an oven full of sugary baked goods. It's really, really pleasant. Less pleasant is the odd olfactory association I have with location. If I need to meet somebody at King's Cross, I can't help but smell creosote on telegraph poles on a sunny day mixed with warm tar. Swiss cottage, damp towels. Perhaps most intriguing of all, though, is how my synesthesia relates to my sex life. Now, the first time I experienced this, it was a bit of a shock, but I found that the more interesting, wonderful things that were going on below the waistline, from the neck up, I felt like I'd been shoved nose first into a bag of Haribo Kiddies Supermix, somewhat inappropriately. And not only can I smell that kind of sucrosey, coconutty Dolly mixture smell, but I can smell the bag as well. It's a really specific sensation, but it is lovely and it's something I look forward to. Unfortunately, it doesn't work the other way around. If I sniff sweeties, I don't spontaneously orgasm. Otherwise, I alone could have put Woolworths and their pick-and-mix counters completely out of business. I'm not responsible for that particular point of the economic downturn. Now, I work as a journalist, and my experiences of smells and sex prompted me to investigate other people's experiences of smells and sex. I didn't find anyone else who smells phantom scents when they're having a good time, but I did find a lot of people with really, really strange smell-related fetishes. I interviewed a guy called Alan, who's really, really into halitosis. He really got off on bad breath. For him, bad breath equaled a good time. And there was a visual element in there for him. If a woman had really hard, sunshine yellow blocks of tartar, like butter in her mouth, that was his ultimate thrill. And he also met another guy who was into bad breath, but he would pay women to consume old-fashioned throat sweets and then cough in his face. From that, I learned that there's actually a big contingent of women making a not insubstantial amount of money from catering for people who like to inhale very particular smells while they're getting their rocks off. One of these women is quite fantastically named, although I don't think this is on her birth certificate, the Queen of Farts. She makes a lot of cash by sitting and passing wind forcibly onto inflated beach balls and through tight pairs of denim jeans. And she also receives several letters a month from a man whose hobby is to steal sofa cushions after attractive women have been sat on them so that he can take them home, strap them to his face, and inhale whatever leftover anal scent may be on said soft furnishings. That's why there's always a sale at DFS. I also spoke to a French woman called Petuse. She calls herself a fart dominatrix. She has a client who specifically requests that she pass wind onto tiny china figures of men. And he said he likes the idea of her being this big Amazonian dominant goddess humiliating these tiny porcelain figures. So it's a bit of a submissive thing for him. From one end of the body to quite the opposite, I also met people who, and this was a real crunch thing for me. This was a thing I found really hard to stomach. People who get seriously turned on by the smell of vomit, other people's vomit. There was one woman, actually a trans woman, who told me that she likes to get her partners to consume vast amounts of greasy food. It has to be fried chicken, chips, burgers, the kind of scram that comes from a van, and then regurgitate it on purpose. And she likes to smell it. She likes them to do this in a bag so that she can inhale it while getting thrills. And I tried to get her to explain where she thought this fascination, where this connection of that very particular whiff and that sexual satisfaction had come from. And I thought her explanation was really interesting because she said, well, I like the idea that what I'm smelling is the sustenance, is the food that has kept my partner alive. I find that quite an intimate experience to be shared between two people. And I also like the idea that what I'm smelling is the very centre of their body. It's a substance, it's a liquid that's been as deep inside them as it's possible to get, which in a weird way is sickeningly poetic. So from one kind of sickness, taking it back to me, perhaps kind of cheesily, I'm experiencing a bit of love sickness at the moment. Something new has happened in my life, and I've moved in with a partner for the very first time. And that involves loads of fresh stuff that has never happened to me before, like coming home to find him with his cock inside of snow boot to make me laugh, and feeling inspired to write really atrociously wanky poetry about his toenail clippings and how they remind me of crescent moons, which I have not shared with him yet. Don't plan to anytime soon. But I've also discovered that when he looks a particular way, specifically if he comes out the shower and he's drying his hair, if his body makes a particular angle, I feel exactly as though I'm in a greenhouse and I can smell tomatoes growing on the vine, green tomatoes, that chlorophyll photosynthesis, very zesty smell of something growing. And it's my favourite, one of my favourite smells in the whole world. So I'm taking that to mean that my nose knows something that I hope I do too. And that maybe these are my salad days and my senses are telling me that this one might be a keeper.
Alex Fox, ladies and gentlemen. I just tried to sort of smell her then as I hugged her. And it is, it's this lovely sorbet smell, beautiful.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For those that don't enjoy the sound or the smell of farts, especially when they're in an intimate situation with somebody else, do you guys know about the trick to stop the smell of farts? It's all got suddenly to... Some of you do. My brother taught me this, and people are getting uncomfortable. I'm enjoying this. You basically just separate the cheeks, and then the fart comes out like this. And it's amazing. And I know some of you are sort of judging me for being so gross, but you will use this at some point in your sexual lives. You will thank me eventually. I ended up giving this tip away, right? I used to work at the Daily Mail. Don't judge me. I've left. It's cool. I was with a team at the Daily Mail. I was on the grad scheme at the Daily Mail. And we all went out for drinks one night. And for some reason, I decided to give away this lovely tip, this lovely gem, to my boss and everyone that worked on my team. I was like, listen, guys, you know, if you're in bed with someone and you want to fart, you just separate the bum cheeks with your fingers like that and it just comes out. It's silent. It's beautiful. And then it came to the point where I decided to leave the Daily Mail because I was having a horrible time. And it came to my leaving speech. And up my boss stood in front of everyone, the editor, everyone in this office gathered round my desk to hear this. And they didn't really say anything about my performance or anything about the work I'd done during my time there. They simply said, yes, Charlie taught us how to make a silent fart happen during an intimate moment with somebody. And that is the legacy that I've left at the Daily Mail and one for which I'm quite proud. So I'm very excited about our fight. It's come to the final storyteller of the evening. I know that's sad, but what's good is he's really brilliant. Yay! There you go, this is good. His name is Richard Tyrone Jones. He's a poet, an educator, an inspiration, and I might even go as far to say that he's my favourite ginger man with heart failure that I've ever met. Please give all your energy that you've got left for our last storyteller of the evening, Richard Tyrone Jones.
Thank you very much, everybody. My name's Richard Tyrone Jones. I'm from Wolverhampton. And the stories that I'm going to tell you, two interconnected stories, are the two times that I really needed a poo, but there wasn't a toilet. I know, I can't believe that I'm headlining either. Crazy world, isn't it? Okay, the first time... that I really needed a poo, but there wasn't a toilet. I was with my girlfriend in my early 20s, and we decided to go travelling, and we wanted to go to Venice, but of course hotels in Venice, romantic hotels, are about 200, 300 euros a night at least, so we couldn't afford that. But we hit upon the idea, okay, if we stay in nearby Treviso, then we can commute into Venice via the train. It only takes about half an hour and it'll be a lot cheaper. We couldn't afford Venice because in those days I was working endless boring admin temp jobs in London, and she was working as a curator at the Women's Library. Rest in peace, first wave feminism. So there we go. Feminism, ladies, does not pay, but then neither does the patriarchy anyway in your case. Sorry about that. Right, so we couldn't afford Venice. We ended up in Treviso. We hadn't booked anywhere, and we had to go to the local tourist information because we didn't speak any Italian either. And so what's the cheapest way that we could stay in Treviso here? And they hooked us up with a little old lady. Basically, if you're like a widow in Treviso and you've got a spare room, then you can rent it out to tourists. And it only cost about 30 euros. That was fantastic. We went there, said hello to her. She didn't speak any English at all either. We decided to go out and visit Treviso, which, although it's quite an old town and has a lovely city walls around it, it's actually built on a grid system, so it's not that interesting. So we decided to get completely wrecked on red wine. And then I headed back to the little old lady's place, and she'd already gone to bed. And then we were loaded, and we ended up having that kind of, you know, shh, my parents are in the next room kind of sex, you know, the one where you can't put your hands over each other's mouths in turn so you don't make too much of a noise. And then I found myself in a huge Kafka-esque block of office flats that was abandoned, desperately running around from room to room, floor to floor, trying to find the toilet, only to find that every toilet that I could find had been blocked up by my sister. Not blocked up in the usual way, you know, by stipping a load of concrete down it to stop squatters from using the facilities, but it had actually been boarded up with a load of old boards and nails, like, I don't know, Biley Coyote in an episode of Roadrunner. I was getting increasingly frustrated by this and increasingly angry at what my... I was getting increasingly angry at what my sister had done. She'd hidden all the R's as well, so that's why I was really angry. And I then woke up actually screaming out loud at the top of my voice in terror inside the spare room of this little old lady in Treviso. Woke up my girlfriend, thought, oh my goodness, she must have heard that. She's going to think I am a psycho. And the ironic thing was that when I kind of checked myself to make sure that I hadn't wrecked myself, not only had I not done a spud, thankfully, but I also didn't need the toilet at all. So it was the sheer psychological terror of not being able to find a toilet that had caused me to sit bolt upright and shout out loud. But anyway, we needed to explain to this little old lady that I wasn't a psychopath. And because my Italian wasn't good enough to just explain what I've just explained to you in far too much detail, I drew a picture of myself and got a red pen to kind of colour in my hair red so that she would know it was me. And a picture of me kind of standing up in like with musical notes coming out of my mouth, but jagged musical notes, and a thinks bubble coming out of my head. And inside that thinks bubble, a ghost, a picture of a scary ghost. So we thought, right, we'll show this to her over breakfast, and then she'll know we're not mental, and she'll let us stay another night tonight. So we just showed it to her and tried to explain this in sign language and broken Italian and English, and she had absolutely no idea what we were talking about and hadn't heard it at all. The second time that I really needed a poo and there wasn't a toilet, I'd been beating my tits off half of the afternoon. It was a friend of mine's stag do, a friend who hosts lots of popular music, comedy and poetry open mic nights around London. It wasn't Charlie, because although she is quite a tomboy, she still wouldn't not enough to have a stag night. You understand? Although you can have a stag night if you want. You know, I'm not going to oppress you, sisters. There we are. Do whatever you like. Basically, we started off the day with some skeet shooting or clay pigeon shooting, if you can use proper English, and then started drinking about midday. In the afternoon, we'd gone to Bloomsbury Bowling Lanes, where we kept popping off to the loos for a bit of a snifter. And this is the first time that I'd ever done speed, and it turned out that it's fucking brilliant. So that's, if you take any moral from this story, there's a, speed is fucking great. It's like coke, but you don't actually realise that you're being a wanker. So so yes, and I was kind of stealing little hot dogs and vol-au-vents off the girl at the aisles bowling alley next to them, and just generally being a wanker. I'd just read Neil Strauss's The Game, which probably explains it. And we then got ejected from there, went round loads of pubs until we got to closing time. And in that time, all of the kind of meat products that I'd been stealing off the girls and all afternoon slowly made their presence felt, until I was desperately caught short and really needed a poo, basically. You knew where it was going, didn't you? And the only place for me to have a poo, because everything was shut and we'd been chucked out of everywhere, was in the churchyard of St. Giles in the fields at the bottom of Denmark Street. And I was cast back to my earlier memories in Cambridge. There was a drunken man dressed, I remember, he was the first person that I'd ever seen, this was about 1999, to be rocking triple denim in an unironic way, and with a pair of big boots. And he's going, "Oh man, I really need a poo, is there anywhere I can have a shit around here?" And we went, shit on the churchyard, shit on the church step, me and my mate, shit on the church step. So we went, "Oh, there's nowhere else." And he did. He pulled his denim down, crimped one out, and then skipped off merrily into the night, going, "All right!" There we are. He later became the basis for my fictional performance poet, punk character, Richie Scurvy. So it was obviously quite an impression that it made him. I thought, if he can do that in such an inspiring way, then so can I. But I crept behind a bush and did a poo. And just how in nature, whenever there's a big patch of nettles and you sting yourself, there's a dock leaf. There were a series of laurel leaves, which are normally quite shiny and unsuitable for use as toilet paper. But in this case, they weren't actually that shiny, and they worked a treat. We all got on the 55 bus, and I'm sorry, there's too much specific detail in this chat. We got on a bus numbered between 50 and 60 back to Leighton, but on the halfway I thought, right, it's probably best if I don't continue this party, because after all, I have just shat in a churchyard. It's probably time for me to go home. And just like in the first story, when I woke up, I found that actually I didn't need a poo at all. Although, unlike the first story, that was because I had shat in a churchyard. But I was punished. I was punished for my behaviour because, 2 years later, I developed near-fatal heart failure. If there's any moral to this tale whatsoever, I think it is that speed is terrible. Don't ever do speed. It's completely damaging and deleterious to your health. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
Richard Tyrone Jones. Also, thank you for Ash on the tech there. He did beautifully. Our producer, Matt. Yay! Come to one of our nights at Hackney or Brixton and follow us on Twitter, SparkLDN. Thank you very much. You've been a beautiful audience. See you downstairs. Woo!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.